Gosh, John, I forget how good you are at karate. That's incredible.
I know, man. I mean, it's all about the right belt.
It is. Timing, you know? Or your leather belt.
Exactly.
I feel like maybe, is that not, that's what you meant?
Not really, okay. But speaking of, Dave, wow, I'm just going to try to transition to save you. Finally, Dave.
Yeah.
Warm spring days are arriving.
Oh,
am I right?
Isn't it great? You know what? I need a new pair of shades that I don't have to baby. Do you know what I'm saying, John? I don't want to take care of them. Let me put them on, take them off, and not have to worry about
them. Hey, Dave, I know exactly
what you mean. Sorry, I didn't mean to rant.
Knock around is the solution. They've been making high-quality shades that don't break the bank since 2005.
Oh, wow.
And they've actually been my personal go-tos for years.
Oh, yeah. I love Knock Around, John. They have over 20 different frame styles, so there's something for everyone, including tons of kids' pairs.
That's right. So whether you're looking to rep your favorite sports teams, you know, like you're a sports guy, spend some relaxation time in the yard, or cruise down Broadway with the windows down like Dave does all the time.
All the time.
Every Tuesday and Thursday and Saturday. Knock Around, that's what you need.
Yeah. All of their lenses have UV 400 protection, which is basically like sunscreen for your eyes, which, by the way, I've tried that and it hurts. Use the sunglasses, everybody. With polarized adult pairs starting at $28, you can get a few pairs to leave in your car, toss in your beach bag, or lend to a friend in need.
Dave, that is such a good price that I might buy a pair just to intentionally lose them.
I don't love that logic, John, but
I know,
you do have a history of misplacement. It's Knock Around.
Don't fight me because of the karate stuff.
But it could be perfect for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, Dadville fans, don't squint through family beach days or trips to the park. Check out knockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order.
That's DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order at knockaround.com. Hey, this is Dave Barnes.
And John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville. Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding. Welcome to the very first episode. We are so glad you're spending your time with us.
Dadville is a place where dads sit around talking, you know, like dads. And sometimes we'll have dad guests. Sometimes we won't, but we promise we will always have dad jokes.
Yes, we will. We promise that. So we'll get right to it. We got to sit down this episode with country music megastar Tyler Hubbard from Florida Georgia Line, affectionately known as FGL here in Nashville. Tyler has been a friend of mine for a while, and one of my favorite things about this episode is how unbelievably candid he is. If you know Tyler at all, he is so honest and wonderfully transparent, and I loved hearing him talk so candidly and openly about being a dad, you know, being a really successful artist and trying to navigate
crazy
how to do
success.
That. Yeah, we can't emphasize how successful, but being a dad in the midst of that and how, you know, that's a new struggle for him and how to do that well. And so I really appreciated his honesty about that and everything we talked about.
Yeah. So tag along as we get to hear a little bit of his story and dig into what it's like being a mega country star dad.
Yes, mega star, all capital letters. Tyler is such a great guy, and I think you're really going to enjoy this. So stick around. That's coming right up. You ready for this, people? I'm coming in hot here. Okay.
I've already read it 3 times. I'm excited.
This is kind of like a Tyler, this is your life. So just enjoy what I'm about to say. Okay. Here we go. About FGL, about Florida Georgia Line. This is crazy. I just want to start by saying how crazy this is. Okay. Amassing the best-selling digital country single of all time with 11-time platinum breakout cruise, Grammy-nominated duo Florida Georgia Line have been making history since 2012. As the first act to achieve RIAA's Diamond certification, which is 10 million copies sold, and holding the longest reign on the Billboard Hot Country chart, 50 straight weeks, with 8-time platinum number one meant to be with Bebe Rexha, the global superstars have tallied 9.3+ billion streams, exceeded 33.6 million track downloads, sold more than 4.6 million albums worldwide, and scored 16 number one singles. I'm sorry, I just have to laugh. There's no other response.
We need multiple times to just stop.
And if you're listening to the podcast, everybody just pause right here. Think about what I just read, and then start again. Playing to over 4 million fans, spanning massive arena and stadium headline tours, they're currently on the Can't Say I Ain't Country Tour and will reprise Florida Georgia Line live from Las Vegas, due to popular demand. Honored by AMAs, CMA Awards, Billboard Music Awards, CMT Awards, and ACM Awards, Their creative empire, which is my favorite part of this, also includes thriving business initiatives, Old Camp Peach Pecan Whiskey, FGL House, Meet and Greet, Tribe Kelly, Tree Vibes Music, and newly launched label Round Here Records. That is, how do you feel?
All I heard was Grammy nominated. I can't believe we didn't win that Grammy. That's so frustrating.
If that is not the
way. I don't know why you had to start with that, Dave. That's all I heard, man.
If that is not a tell on the way a human heart works.
Exactly, right?
Isn't that amazing? Dude, that's incredible. I mean, how do you feel when, I mean, I'm sure you don't sit around reading that all the time. How do you feel when you?
I do at least once a week, just for a little confidence builder there.
Any more than that would be too much. Right. Once a week is
good. We want to keep it humble.
Yeah.
Man, it feels good. You know, it's incredible. Like, it's pretty surreal to hear that, you know. I mean, 2012, I remember just being in a place where it was kind of like, what are we doing, man? But at the same time, a really cool place because we had nothing to lose. We literally had nothing. So I think I had $12 in my name, and we were just chasing a crazy dream. And that's when we were in the studio recording Cruise, you know. And to think back now, it's just crazy, man. Life is so wild and can change on a, you know, on a dime, and just drastically go any direction. So it's pretty wild to see what our journey's been like, and kind of man, how God's blessed us so much. And just you know, we're in a really cool place of thanksgiving and kind of gratitude, kind of in that headspace these days. And it's just it's a good place to be, man. Feels great.
Yeah, that is like my favorite thing. I feel like with my friends, you know, we had Tomlin on. And reading
it. Sheets, crazy.
It's crazy, but it's so fun to sit with friends and kind of go like, how do you feel? I mean, even with Holcomb, like, you know, how do you feel? Because you know, we're all putting our heads down and you're just cranking, you know, you're just doing the best you can. But to have these moments of sort of clarity when somebody's like, hey, can we just talk for a second about what's been going on? I love hearing my friends speak to that, like hearing them go like, wow, you know, it's fun to hear that again. Or
it is good, because I think we're all guilty of. And I don't know, I think this is a good thing, but to me, nothing's changed since really 2012. Same mind state, same, gotta work so hard, gotta like always win, gotta da 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 da, you know, as opposed to, man, we should just lay back and enjoy the fruits of our labor
a little bit.
You know what I'm
saying? Well, I think that's one of the powerful takeaways when you hear something like that, is to recognize, yeah, I feel the same,
right?
You know? I mean, I haven't streamed 9.3 billion.
Yeah, we're just the same,
songs,
dude. That's just numbers. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's cool. It's actually really cool. I'm not trying to take away from it, but at the same time, it's like, yo, we're still the same, same people with the same mentality and same mindset.
Yeah. Well, between now and 2012, you have done probably 10 million interviews. So we don't want this to be the same interview that you've done 10 million times. But let's just quickly, we like to start with, you know, a short flyover. So let's talk.
That's why we have our.
That's it. That
pilot. That's right.
That's like exactly.
We try to go with nautical pilot themes.
Nautical. I like that.
It's hard to take you guys serious, but I kind of like it.
That's kind of the point.
I'm in a helicopter with you guys
right
now.
We want you to giggle at any point.
Let's go.
That's our goal.
Okay. So what was the Hubbard house like growing up? Like, where was it? Where'd you grow up?
Well, I grew up in small town Georgia, a little town called Monroe.
It's either Monroe or Monroe, and it's Monroe.
Monroe.
Okay.
Monroe.
Respect.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's Monroe.
I like the interesting.
I never even. Now that you mention it, how do I say it?
If someone says Monroe, they're probably from.
Yeah, I agree.
Monroe.
I think so.
Yeah.
But no, I grew up in a great home, man. Had amazing parents. I was the oldest of three kids. My brother was 2 years younger than me, and my sister is 14 years younger than me. So that was kind of a cool dynamic. She was born. I was. You know, in my teenage years, and just that was a cool part of our life and our story. But as I get older, I look back and realize maybe it wasn't so perfect, but I always kind of described it as the seventh heaven family, you know.
Wow.
Just pretty perfect, man. My dad worked really hard and was a really good dad and a really good husband and a good example for us, and taught me how to work hard, and that's kind of what we did for fun together. And my mom was able to stay at home and raise us.
Okay. What did your dad do?
He was a what do you want to call it? Let's just say self-employed entrepreneur. He kind of bounced around, but he was a creative. That's probably a good word, because he just loved to start companies and businesses, and then he would, you know, get bored pretty quickly and move on to something else, whether it was landscaping or the storage facility. We did storage business for a while. We did he did tree removal. He loved anything outside, just hard work, good labor, he'd love to do.
We always talk about how it's going to be so funny when our kids grow up and they, like, go to college, start talking to other kids about what their parents did. Because they'll be like, well, our dads were just around.
Yeah, they just... I think, like, they did something with music, but it felt like they were at the house a lot.
I mean, around any given day, around like 1 p.m.
Now, my granddad, he took trees out of the ground. He built stuff. Now, granddad, not my dad, but like my granddad, he did stuff. I know what he did. Not sure with my dad.
My dad just kind of, you know, piddled around.
Yeah, piddled.
But it's interesting if you, anyone who has parents who are entrepreneurial, it's like a totally, there isn't that like rigid kind of system in place.
Right, right.
So.
Which that just explains. I mean, I'm just a lot like him, you know, in that sense. You know, I worked for somebody else for a short period of time and just realized that wasn't for me, you know.
Yeah.
Just enjoyed working for myself. And, you know, I detailed cars from the time I was 15 until once I realized I didn't want to even work for my dad. I didn't like dragging limbs all day. I started washing cars on my own. And
from there.
My own,
and was he okay with that?
Yeah, he was. I think he was kind of like, cool, you know. He bought him a trailer. He's out.
Got a side hustle.
Yeah. So he was. Yeah. So I was doing that from 15. I did that all the way through college, on and off. Had my little business that I could just wash cars wherever I was at. So whether I went down to the beach or up here in school or wherever, I did that all through college, and that was how I made ends meet. You know.
Yeah.
So
what was their dynamic? Like, what were your parents' dynamic? What was that like?
It was good, man. I mean, growing up, I felt like they had a strong marriage, you know, good relationship. Dad would occasionally, I remember him saying, like, you know, me and mom aren't perfect, you know, but when we have problems, we just talk through it, you know. And I never really saw them fight per se or anything like that. So, you know, for me as a kid, it was just like, oh yeah, mom and dad's got a great relationship, you know. And I just think I'm thankful, man. I think dad was a really good example and picture for me to see how it's supposed to be, you know. So I think they had a great dynamic and a good relationship, and it's funny looking back now as an adult, trying to analyze your parents' marriage. Oh, you totally. Know, because as a kid it's just a totally different thing, but still, I mean, to this day I still kind of feel like they had a
I think the thing that I feel like I'm learning as I get older, it really does seem to be, and there's more camps than this, but I feel like you kind of grow up either feeling one of two ways. This is really simplified, but I think there's some truth to it. Feeling like my family feels pretty like safe and normal. Like there may be problems, but there's nothing that I deem it as like wrong, you know? Or you grow up knowing like, this is not a safe place.
Right.
I don't like it. I don't like how my parents are. I don't like how they treat me, whatever. And so it's a real blessing to your point. Cause I feel the same. And I know John does too. Like growing up in a house where I have to think back to go like, well, I mean, was there something that was weird?
Right.
Oh, yeah, you know, a couple moments like this, but not having an overall
totally
feeling of like, yeah, it was kind of tricky, or dad split, or mom's, you know, whatever, that you can really look back and go like, no, it felt like I felt safe and felt
totally
cared for. And,
right.
Which is such a massive blessing.
Yeah, totally, man.
Massive,
really,
massive
really.
Blessing.
I feel like when you think back on your childhood, obviously there's a zillion memories that we all have, but I feel like when I think back to my dad at a certain, like when I was in junior high or whatever, I think of us playing basketball in the driveway.
Mm.
That's like, I'm
that's
always going to go back to like a couple
thing.
Of these things. What are those for you? Like you work with your dad?
Yeah, it was work. It was work, or, you know, building stuff together, work, just working, even if it wasn't like, you know, actually doing what he did for a living, but working in the garage or rebuilding a car. We rebuilt a car, a Volkswagen Beetle, and made it, kind of built a hot rod out of it for a few years there. And then we also rode dirt bikes together. That
there
was
it
kind
is.
Of our
I
thing.
Was wondering
so,
where you got that.
Yeah.
So that was him.
So we loved to work and ride dirt bikes. That was pretty much it. I mean, we'd fish and
I mean,
hang
it
kind of
sounds like
that was it.
He was like the greatest dad that a little boy would want to have.
Yeah,
like,
he was.
All of his interests were right in line with what
it was cool, man, you know,
little boy from Monroe,
right? And he was so busy too, like that it really, you know, if we even had, he worked so hard, which I think was a good, you know, I don't think that's a negative thing in my situation necessarily, but it made me just really value that time together, you know. I remember we would throw the baseball and do a few things here and there that were just kind of unique in what I wasn't used to, and basically we would just work together a lot, you know.
Yeah,
but anytime you could get 10 or 15 minutes throwing the baseball or something, that was
That was special.
That was huge, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was awesome.
So did any of the music stuff come from them? Was it a musical family? Or?
Not really, man. My mom played piano in church and read music and did that whole deal. But that was kind of before I was born. So we always had a piano in the house. But no, it didn't really get played much. And no, really, music wasn't like a big part of our life. You know what I mean? I just remember as a kid just listening to the radio on the way to school every morning. You know, it was usually the Fish.
Oh yeah, dude. For
or
sure.
Or,
not
or maybe
Fish,
the country radio. The Fish. Yeah. Right. The Christian
right.
The universal radio
so
station.
So your mom would play piano at church or that was before you?
That was before me, but
so you were
so she did have a little musical whatever.
Yeah.
Inspiration or whatever.
Yeah, like tilt.
She had a little musical in her brain.
So when did you get into, like, how did that happen with you?
Man, I was in kind of a crazy story. I was like seventh grade or so. I was in church, and I remember, kind of just falling in love with music because I use that as a way to talk to Jesus in a way. So I just remember being like, whoa, this is different. Like, I'm really connected with God, and it's through this music. And I just sort of, I don't know, I remember being in middle school and just falling in love with music, and then I didn't play any instruments, or I didn't really even sing out loud because it wasn't cool back then, right? It wasn't cool to sing. And I was just like,
sure.
I never did sing. I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And I just remember being in youth group one night, and one of the, actually, I believe it was Corey Crowder, or either the guy that was with Corey Crowder, which is crazy.
You're kidding
small
me.
World. No, he was leading worship in my youth group at church.
What?
In Loganville, Georgia. Yeah. And they were leaving and going on to do the next thing or whatever, and I just kind of felt God saying, hey, that's what you need to do, is learn how to do that. And I'm like,
wow.
I'm like thinking in my head, what? I don't play guitar. Definitely not singing. Like,
you really felt like he said that.
Yeah.
And this is seventh grade.
Straight up in seventh grade, yeah. And
man.
So then this new guy, Stephen White, took over for a little while, and he was like the band leader or whatever for the youth group. So I went to him and said, hey, would you mind if I joined the band or whatever? He was like, what do you do? I said, well, I don't really do much, but I'd like to learn to play guitar a little bit.
Quote, unquote, I don't really
do I don't really do a whole lot, but I can learn.
You're like,
well,
let's worry about that later.
We'll figure that out.
I was like, I really plan on learning how to play by watching you. And that's what I did. I just remember, like, I was just the guy that played acoustic guitar in the back, like, and just learned how to play and watch Steven do his thing. And then, I don't know, 6 months later, he was like, all right, I'm off to do whatever he was doing next. He was like, I want you to be the new leader. And I was like,
dang.
What? So I just remember, Wednesday night youth service, just getting up there and singing my first song. And
good night.
And kind of going from there. But that's kind of where, I mean, it wasn't a family thing. It wasn't something I grew up with. It wasn't even something I expected, which was cool because, you know, by ninth and 10th grade, I felt pretty comfortable on stage. And I was like, wow, like, this is really fun. I love music.
So did you get, like, did you get the bug? Like, was it something where you were like, I really like this?
Yeah.
I like how this feels. I like doing this.
Yeah, I think so. And I genuinely just felt like that's what God wanted me to do. Like, that was like a calling, if you will, you know? So I was like, all right, I'm just going to, this feels like I'm in the right place. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I keep.
So how did that very first night go? When, like, you're leading
for the
first
time. Do you
remember?
I think it went pretty good, man. I mean, I'm sure if I could go back and watch it now, I wouldn't say the same thing. But, definitely no big train wrecks or nothing. But, again, it was in a safe environment. It was my 30-person youth group, you know what I'm saying, in church.
Of kids you knew.
It wasn't so much if you messed up, they were going to boo you off stage. You know, it was kind of like, we're just here to worship. And so it was a good learning experience over those years. And then learning how to build a band. And around that time, 10th grade, I moved from the public school to Loganville Christian, which was like a really small Christian school. We were the oldest class. We were the first graduating class.
Oh, wow.
They needed a band. They needed a worship thing, band for chapel. And so when I went there, they were like, well, good, we need a worship leader. Here you are. You're going to be the worship guy. And it was like, well, I just kind of, whatever. All right, let's see what happens. So, and at that time, it was also starting to get cool to play guitar. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're in high school.
Oh, yeah.
The chicks think it's cool.
Oh,
if you play guitar. The dudes are all wanting
to
learn how to play guitar.
Yep.
So I was like, all right. So I was probably a year or two ahead of that, which was nice. And I don't know, man, just kind of continued to create the passion and the drive for this. And then I think the next kind of chapter was, well, okay, I'm about to graduate high school. I wasn't even going to go to college. I was like, I'm just going to do what my dad did and run my own businesses. And I even quit sports because I didn't like staying after school to practice if I wasn't going to get paid. So I'd want to go. I'd rather go wash a car and go home, make some money after
that
school.
That is crazy. Yeah.
So I loved just to work and make money. I was like, all right, I'll just run my own business. And I guess I just thought I'd wash cars the rest of my life or whatever.
So the whole time that you're the known at this point as the music guy, like you're the guy.
Yeah,
up front.
In my small town. Yeah. I would say so. Like the, yeah.
But you still weren't, at least at this point, you weren't thinking, okay, this is after high school. This is what I'm doing.
No, I didn't really know. I knew that I was probably, that was what I was really interested in. That was what I was about to say was, right there around the time where everybody was moving to college, I was like, oh, I went and did a couple visits. I was like, well, this, maybe I should go to college because this looks like a lot of fun. And I think this, I'll probably miss out on a really good time.
So you really were not, so
that
was a right hand turn from that. That was not like, I'm going to do college. You're like, maybe I should think about that.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to, I was not planning on going to college. And then I happened to do pretty good on my test, whatever, whatever it was, SAT or whatever. And I remember just, deciding I was going to go to college because, like, really just for the good time. I'm like, look, I don't want all my friends going off to college and I'm just here watching college.
Yeah, right.
It sounds like a cool idea at the time, but then when you really think about it, it's like, okay, like 3 months in, this is going to get old.
Yeah, so, right.
So anyways, I got accepted to a few schools in Georgia and I was planning on going there. Then I applied to Belmont because I really I'd come to Nashville to the Passion Conference, Tomlin leading, was Chris Tomlin at the time. I know, right? Small world again. So
wait,
then,
do you know what year that was?
2000 and it was, I graduated in 2004.
Dude, I think Wirtz and I played that conference.
You probably did.
Oh my God.
Because I remember being a huge Dave Barnes fan and like
that was the
started
moment
freshman
where
in college
he
at least. So it had to be around that same,
yeah, that's so
that
funny.
Same year. So
that's crazy.
So fell in love with Nashville that week. Man, this is a cool city.
So you'd never been. Mm-mm. So Passion was your first.
Passion was. We came up here for a few days and like, this is a cool city. It's 4 or 5 hours from home. It's not like 12 hours.
Yeah.
You know. So I can get, because everybody was going to their, UGA or somewhere.
Yep.
And I was like, look, I just really want to do something different.
Yeah.
I didn't think anything was really going to hold my attention or my interest enough to get through 4 years of schooling. I just hated school. So I was like, you know what? Maybe if I can study something to do with music, that'll keep me interested. So that was where I was like, all right. So then I wanted, but I also didn't want a music degree because I was like, what's that going to get me at this music thing? Like, am I going to learn how to go read notes?
And what were your parents saying? What was their opinion on college?
Well, they encouraged me to do it, but not hard. I mean, they would have probably supported me either way. You know, my dad went to school and dropped out first semester and said it wasn't for him. And, I just thought because we were built so much alike, college probably wouldn't be for me either.
Yeah.
But it really was. I mean, I loved it. Once moved to Nashville and went to Belmont, got accepted there, which was crazy. And that's what I told myself. If I get accepted to Belmont, I'm going to go to Nashville.
Wow.
And so I did, and which was kind of another like answered prayer slash little God just saying, all right, you need to be up here. So did that. And, one thing kind of led to the next. I was not even into music for those 4 years I was in college either because it was so intimidating because everybody at Belmont's so good and so talented.
Oh,
I was like, well, this ain't for me. I'm just going
to.
And I always was kind of like the guy that wanted to be different than everybody. So, like, if everybody was doing one thing, I would do the opposite.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I did. I would still write occasionally and maybe by myself or something, but it wasn't like a career that I was pursuing, And then,
so what? How were you spending your time? Like, was there anything – were you –
playing sports,
okay,
like pick up ball and riding my crotch rocket around campus like an idiot, trying to be cool and working out and just being a college kid.
Just going
kid
to school. That's great.
Just
that's
classes
great. That's
and
great.
Doing the deal,
So you enjoyed it enough that you're like, I want to stay in and actually do school.
Yeah. And my parents said if I, one thing I knew that was an opportunity is my parents said, look, if you go to college and you pass your classes, we'll pay for your college.
Oh, dang.
Which was huge.
Huge.
Especially going to Belmont.
Huge.
So I was like, well, even if I hate college, like I should do that.
This
just for a free,
So, I wanted to say, I can't tell you, and I think we've even talked about this on this podcast before, maybe not, but there is no doubt in my mind that God had a plan in me going to MTSU and not Belmont. Now, I had not even considered Belmont, but going to MTSU, that's where I started playing music. That's where I started writing songs and singing. I had this wonderful, safe place to do it. I didn't know anybody else who did. I mean, Luke Laird and Brandon Heath were both in school there and were starting their collective. I was dear friends of both of them. But Brandon wasn't enough of an artist yet that it was like, dang, dude, he's playing these songs that are, you know, we're all, Luke would play great songs. He was writing in his dorm room by himself, but nobody was so good that I was like, I shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
Everybody that I knew that went to Belmont, I was terrified of.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a joke. Like, I laughed. I spoke at Belmont last week, and that came up, and I was like, I would not have, I really don't think I would be doing what I'm doing now if I had gone to Belmont. Because I'd have rocked in and been like, oh, I'm kind of picking on this little thing. Hey, I'm a freshman, like this little thing I wrote. And some guy's like,
you're right.
I was on The Voice last week. And yeah. I'm like, oh my God.
I actually won The Voice last week.
And so
and I wasn't
think,
even on it.
Well, yeah, they just saw me. They just gave it to me. But to your point, that school is crazy if you go in contemplating you. It feels like unless you go in, those guys, girls have been playing whatever since 12, and they've been getting private lessons in The Voice their whole life, and then they go to Belmont, and they're like, I'm here to do this. So if it would have been like me or you rolling up, like, yeah, I like music, I'm trying to figure it out, like,
which is encouraging to people out there because there's thousands of people at Belmont that are way more talented than me.
Oh, my gosh.
And you don't have to necessarily be the best make it in your own world and do your own thing. And, because that was intimidating. I didn't even get my guitar out for like 3 or 4 years.
Oh, my gosh.
I met BK who played baseball and I was like, oh, okay, he's not like some classically trained, like very perfect everything.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We need to do music together. Yeah,
I mean, all of my friends that would, I mean, I know y'all are the same. Like, all of my friends that went to Belmont are some of my most talented friends.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's a joke.
It's crazy.
So you,
we should go recruit some people now.
Dude,
now
I'm telling you, just like, so okay, so you get done with Belmont, you and BK link up, and I'm kind of jump a little bit here. One of the things that is so crazy, and I think is hysterical about your story, and you've got to talk about this for a second. You guys formed the band. Y'all start playing. Would you please just tell a little bit about the barbecue? The barbecue
story? Oh, man. Well, that was like our big break, I would say, which is funny now. But no, we, at the time, you know, we were just traveling the Southeast and we were like calling. We had just graduated college. We were living together in this house that I was telling you about, five dudes living in this piece of junk house in Green Hills, and all our neighbors probably hated us.
Yep.
But we were calling clubs and bars on the weekends, acting like we were booking agents and booking
shows. I love these stories, man.
Every weekend, we would just do the Southeast, and we would take all my car washing materials out of my trailer and throw guitars and amps in there, and we would just go. And so,
and you and BK, are y'all writing these songs together? Is that kind of what's
happening? We had written songs. We were playing covers at the time, too, a little bit. Just anything to kind of get the gig and get paid, you know.
Yeah.
And we were selling. We had made this little EP we were selling on the side, and we got a call from our manager that said, hey, I just got a call from the Country Throwdown Tour, and they want y'all to be on the tour. And we thought, man, that's huge, dude. A Country Throwdown Tour? Like, it was kind of like the big country tour that traveled around at the time, and it was just kind of like, for us, we're like, man, that's huge. He's like, there's one catch, though. You guys, they want y'all to put your gear on the semi for the tour, and then they're going to – you can't have a trailer. They're going to put a big Kingsford grill behind y'all's van. And first of all, we were the only band on this tour that didn't have a tour bus. So we had like eight or nine dudes in this church van, and we're driving ourselves through the night following the tour. And long story short, the way our days looked is we would get there, we would go unload our gear from their semis, and then we would play a show in the middle of the day. We were like the second act on the smallest stage, and that was when Cruise had just come out. So we were starting to get a little momentum, but we would play 100 degree, you know,
What time?
It was like 2:30 in the afternoon, like right there.
The sun is just right there. Above you.
Yeah. So we'd play that. We would break down the stage, go load our gear up, and then we would have to go straight to the grocery store, all the band. Go to the store, they'd give us like an allowance, and we had to buy all the materials, all the hot dogs and hamburgers and everything. And then we would come back, and we'd have to crank this grill up, and we had to cook for the whole tour, the whole staff, the whole crew, all the bands. And so after the, this was for the whole night now. So for the rest of the night, we would serve the whole tour. And yeah, after I think it was Gary Allen was headlining. So after he got off stage, his whole band and everybody come. So until like midnight, we're partying and serving hamburgers from our van. And then we would load up, pour some water on the grill. And sometimes it would even go out. We would literally close the grill and head down the road, dragging ashes and embers down the interstate. So that's what we did, and we were jacked on it for a while. But by that end of that tour, I mean, that made us who we were. That was really, I mean, going on little to no sleep, switching drivers, driving ourselves through the night, you know, just doing the whole deal.
How many shows did you do?
It was a whole summer. I actually don't know an exact, I would say it was probably 30 to 40 shows. I mean, it was a tour. You know what I mean? It was a whole summer deal.
This is the, you know what I think? There's so many things that I think are so amazing. But that's right. First of all, I'm literally crying right
now. And then we'd stand in line for hours right after our show. Oh. As if we weren't already dehydrated and sunburned, we would just stand out there in the sun. And we thought we were so hard for standing out there for 2 or 3 hours and signing autographs for the fans. And we're like, man. You know, looking back now, it's like, wow. But that's you know.
Dude, there's an infamous story about Garth Brooks at Fanfare. Do you know
about
this?
I heard about that.
He signed autographs. This is a, like, documented. My friend worked this night. He signed autographs for 24 hours. Taylor, like, got close. Remember, she, like, when she was, like, coming up. Yeah, she, like,
got weak.
Yeah, she got weak. She bowed out. But I think,
I mean, I've never broke 20 hours.
That's true. Yeah, I know. Which is
easily.
I've always respected about you. Yeah. One of the things that I think is so amazing about that story is I was talking to some friends about this too. The country genre is such a fascinating genre because there's really kind of two ways you come up. You either do the van thing and you hit that really hard for a while, and then you get picked up and you get signed to the bus thing. But man, most of the people I know, you're on a bus day one. You know what I mean? Like, you do your radio tour in a van and you fly or whatever. But you know, if you're on a label, they hook you up with another tour, and they just tour support you onto a bus, and then you only do a bus. Right. So I think what's so cool about y'all is that y'all had already been doing that, but then you serve even more time where you're literally serving food to these other acts. And then it seems like kind of with Cruise, sort of overnight, that song catches, and then it's a rocket to the moon.
Yeah, ish. You know, it was
because it was on the highway for a minute, yeah. Right? And that's where it kind of sparked.
Yeah, exactly. And it did take off really quick. But I do remember being in the back of that van a few times and calling our business manager, because our whole thing was like, we're not going to get on a bus until we can pay for it. Because it's easy to say, yeah, I'll take a tour support bus out, but then you're just going in debt. And it was like, look, we're going to do things different.
Wow.
We don't.
That's where your dad's entrepreneurial.
Oh man, right. Like, you're just
why do I want to be on a bus if I can't pay for it?
Yeah. That's right.
So we stayed in the van, and then we went to a Sprinter van, which is a little bit nicer. And then we finally got to where we were getting paid enough to get a bus. But because of that, man, we just appreciated that bus like heaven, dude.
That's,
you know,
the
what
thing.
I'm saying?
That's
and
the
looking
thing.
Back now, I mean, that was even. We had 12 dudes crammed on a bus. We had just met our wives. We weren't married yet, but they were coming out with us. So 12 dudes on a bus and our girlfriends at the time sleeping, we were sharing a little bunk with them. So it's like, looking back now, that's still roughing it, but looking back then, it was like, man, we got it made.
Oh
yeah,
dude,
this is awesome.
It.
I can lay down
totally.
I mean, got my girl, I can't move, but it's straight.
I mean, literally, just quote unquote, I can lay down. Like, when you get to a point where you have been sitting up sleeping or like on some bench up against the window, like, see, you know,
yeah,
like, and that's the thing too. I think that does have a lot to do with everybody's story, is like with y'all, because I think with both y'all are such grateful guys. Y'all worked. Y'all just worked. Yeah. And so I think everything that y'all have been able to achieve, you can appreciate it. And I think that matters. I think that's one of the things that I really grieve sometimes in music, is when you have guys and it's great, and it's in girls and bands where they pop off really quick. There is this sort of sense of like, you miss the work part of it. You know, you miss the years, Lord knows, we know, in a van.
Oh,
and, you know, where you go, like, when you finally get those gigs that you've been working for, you can actually stand on stage or go to sleep and actually think, like, man, this is awesome.
Yeah.
We had Andy Grammer on, and, you know, I don't know if you know his story, but he was a busker out in 3rd Street Promenade.
Santa Monica, yeah.
For years.
Yeah.
Years and years, just like literally just trying to put together. He said, like, I needed to put together like the best like 12 minutes of music, because I figured like you had 20 minutes at this one spot, then you had to move. And he, like, I love hearing somebody talk about the trenches in that way, which if you do a one tour, I think that's equivalent to a couple years of busking.
Yeah.
Where you're firing up a grill for 8 hours for the entire tour.
Yes.
And then driving yourselves behind their buses while they're sleeping.
Well, not to mention, too, just the how you view everybody else on a tour.
Right.
Like, because, I mean, you know, like, I was out, y'all, a couple of weekends ago. It's 18,000 people, these massive shows. You got a billion crew people. Like, you can go, like, hey, man, I know the hustle.
Right.
Like, I'm not just sloughing off these people.
Totally.
Like, I get it.
Yeah, it makes you appreciate it. You know,
there you go.
You definitely don't leave the stage without thanking everybody.
Yes,
you know?
That's a great way to put it.
It's a really good place to be, man.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm really
I agree.
So, back in the day, this is around what? Oh,
no, this is 13, 13, 12, 13?
Oh, this has been, okay.
For what?
So back when I was signed to Island Def Jam, I just signed with them. I remember, I mean, no one at the label explicitly told me, hey, we don't want your faith to be like at the forefront of this. But it was definitely the message that was received. You know, like they sort of saw my faith as this, we don't understand this, kind of something that needs to be handled carefully. And, you know, we're going to present him in a very calculated way, almost afraid of it, you know. What was your experience like with your label as everything exploded? Did you experience any of that?
But not so much. Not really. At the time, I mean, I remember when we were coming up and, yeah, around the Country Throwdown time, that was when Cruise was blowing up. It was starting to make some money. So, of course, all the labels were coming out from the woodworks, wanting to take us to dinner and all that stuff. And BK and I, we were very actually unique, I think, in this way. I don't know what it was, but we had a really bad taste in our mouth for record labels. We didn't want nothing to do with them. We didn't want to hear their BS. We were building this ourselves. We didn't need them. And that was our mentality because we just heard all the stories, you know, and all our friends were, well, I'm here. You hear how great it is to get signed. And then you realize, man, this ain't really what it's all cracked up to be. This is really just a big old loan, and they own
great
me.
Great to get signed, not so great to be signed.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So we were just kind of like doing our own thing, like not pursuing a record deal. And our MO was always like, look, when the time's right, the record labels are going to come running to us. We're not going to run to them, ever. So we did that, and it worked out great. And I just remember sitting down, like one of the first few meetings with the label that we ended up signing with. I remember them coming out to one of those shows, watching us play, meeting up after the show. We're changing clothes and doing our thing. And they're sitting down trying to, you know, sign us and smooth us a little bit. And I just kind of said, look, appreciate you being here. Basically, we're a team and we're already you know, working on all cylinders, man. We're rocking. Appreciate y'all wanting to be, you know, sign us. But the one way this is going to ever work is you guys are going to be partners with us. And we're going to still do our thing the way we do our thing. We sort of set the precedent like that at the beginning. So ever since, we've really had a healthy relationship with the label in the sense of, like, they sort of know their role and and we know our role. And, and it sort of was established like that at the beginning. And not in a disrespectful way, but more of a, look, this has been done well and this is how we want to do things. Until this is not working, let's just do it this way. And it's just been working. And so we kind of have a healthy relationship where we do a lot of things in-house and internally and with our management and our house and our team over at Big Louds, which was the team that kind of believed in us first with our publishing deal and just that whole family over there. So we just like to do things our way, and they've just always kind of signed off on it. So it's been cool, and they trust us and we trust them. Yeah. And it's a unique relationship, but it's really good for us.
That's really cool. And then what was it, like a month ago? It was when, Dave, you were out on the road. And you guys had Chris Tomlin come out on stage and sing How Great Is Our God, right?
Yeah.
So what was that like? What was that moment like? I mean, that's sort of like when I compare it to my situation getting in with Island Def Jam, I hear that story and I'm like, man, what a great sort of expression of like, hey, this is who we are. This is something that's really important to us. We're going to have our friend Chris come out and sing this song. We don't know how this is going to go, but we're just going to do this. What was the decision-making like leading up to that?
Man, I mean, it was pretty simple. You know, we had connected with Chris and became good buddies and started writing some songs together and hanging and just kind of felt like we were longtime friends. And I don't know, not too long after we started hanging out, I was like, man, we should do some stuff together, like do some shows or do something. And then, I don't know, he just looked at the tour and said, I think it also originally started with us saying, why don't you come out and write with us on the road? Because that's where we do a lot of our writing. Mm-hmm. And we have our Trevise bus out there and our writers, and that's where we get a lot done. So he had agreed to do that. And then we're like, well, why don't we just do a song or two together? And he was all about it. And I just like, I love him, man. He's like so open-minded and kind of down to do anything. And just a lot like BK and myself, you know. So we just sort of dreamed it up a little bit and said, why don't you just come out during this moment where we're already kind of in a reverent moment. We sort of tell our story about where we came from and how we fell in love with music and church a little bit, you know, and how BK and I feel like this is, you know, we've been put together by God, and this is what God wants us to be doing. And we just give him the glory for a minute. And then, And then we were able to bring Tomlin out and go into that moment, which was, to me, probably one of the best moments of my whole career. I mean, for sure, I would definitely say that's something I'll never forget. It was just, I don't know, God was moving in that place like crazy. And, I mean, nothing but the Spirit. Everybody could feel it. And there was 20,000 beer cans in the air praising Jesus. And it was just, it was incredible, man. Like, nobody expected it, and nobody saw it coming. You know, even myself, I don't think, for God to show up like that, which is, we should always expect that. But it was just a cool moment, and I don't know what all the pieces of the equation that made that such a special night and such a special moment. But, you know, we definitely were buzzing off that for about a week or two, and I think we'll, you know, it definitely opened up our eyes to some bigger possibilities and, you know, kind of just letting God work and move within our community and our people and our fans. And it's been incredible, man. So we'll see what else God does with that.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, John.
How many times in the last 4 months have you heard somebody say the phrase, "We're living in wild times"?
That exact phrase?
That exact phrase, yes.
2,976,292.
That's the number that I got.
Yes, yes.
Man, well, these are wild times.
They are wild times. Do you think that people can get life insurance in such wild times?
Well, my friends at Policy Genius think it's a great time to buy life insurance. And you know what? I don't disagree.
Please don't. You know, Policy Genius has this way that you can compare quotes from the top life insurance companies all in one place.
Yeah, Policy Genius is like a grocery store for life insurance. Mm-hmm. You know when you're shopping at the grocery store and there are like 80 different kinds of toilet paper? Yep. There's like double ply, there's single ply, there's double roll, there's store brand, there's expensive brand.
Yeah, who knew there could be so much option in cleaning the old touche?
Well, Policy Genius doesn't help you choose toilet paper. Unfortunately, that's the bad news. The good news is it does give you the rundown to make a better decision on a life insurance plan. And once you apply, the Policy Genius team handles all the red tape and all the paperwork for you, which is great because we all hate red tape and paperwork. And well, they do it for free.
Hold on. Speaking of paperwork, I just want to circle back real quick. Yep. Do you think that Policy Genius can help pick toilet paper? Yes or no?
I'm thinking probably not.
Okay.
But if you do hit any speed bumps in your application process, they will be there to help you all the way through it.
That's amazing. So if you're one of the many people looking to buy life insurance right now, but you're not sure where to start, head to Policy Genius.
And since we're such great dads, here on the Dadville podcast, Policy Genius will find the best rate and handle the process completely, leaving you more time to spend with your family and making dad jokes.
Yes.
Also, it's nice to get your family protected and give you one less thing to worry about.
Oh, man. Thanks, Policy Genius. But really quickly, John, do you think they can help with toilet paper?
No, I think you should ask your wife about that.
Okay, that's okay. Man.
Dave, I want to give a shout out. And when I give a shout out, I always laugh because it just brings me so much joy to give a shout out to Claritin.
Yes.
For supporting this episode and providing us with free samples.
You know it, John. This time of year, my allergies are in fuego. They're always on the attack, but I use this and you should too.
Oh, I do, Dave. Every day in our house. Yeah. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
Designed for serious allergy sufferers, which is me raising my hand, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill to relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better.
This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
John, I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for a long time, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can go for a run without my eyes watering. I may be crying, but it's not from allergies.
Totally different.
And I can sing without feeling like I have like a big old, let's not even call it a frog. It's like a toad.
It's like a family of toads.
It's a family. It's a turtle.
Yeah.
In my throat.
So, you ready to live life as if you don't have allergies?
Yeah, me.
It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. Oh my gosh. I didn't know you could stretch that far. That's amazing.
I can't. That's actually a friend of mine.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Do you, speaking of your friends, do you ever bring your kids to the grocery store?
Oh, Dave, that's like the rookiest of rookie mistakes. Oh. No. In fact, you shouldn't even bring yourself to the grocery store.
Whoa.
It's Thrive Market all the way, Dave.
That was a trick question, and that is also the right answer, John. Thrive Market is our go-to for all our grocery and household essentials. In the convenience of ordering everything on their website or app and getting everything delivered to your doorstep quickly is a huge stress reliever.
Huge stress reliever. And the products are amazing. Mm-hmm. Plus, you can curate your own shopping experience with a few clicks and trust that you're getting high-quality products so that you can shop worry-free.
Yes.
I don't like to shop worried. You know what I mean?
Nah, worry shopping is the worst.
You just place an order for some gluten-free items, like using the gluten-free filter.
Ooh.
Boom, it just gives you all the gluten-free stuff.
Wow.
I got FitJoy grain-free pretzels.
Yeah.
PIP corn white cheddar cheese balls.
Guys, for those of us in the loop, it's called pip corn.
No, I call it PIP. It's, a Midwestern regional thing.
Totally.
And I got some Lotus ramen noodles.
You are off. You're just off.
I'm off to the races,
Dave. You are
Dave.
Crazy, John. Not only do I save time shopping as a Thrive Market member, I also save money on every single grocery order, over 30% each time on average.
That's crazy.
They even have a price match guarantee and a deals page that changes weekly.
That's right, Dave. In fact, on my last order, not to be competitive about it, but my last order of gluten-free items, the cost was $46. I saved $11.
I saved 10 last time. Plus, when you join Thrive Market, and you can enjoy it and join it, John. I was trying to make both those
words
work.
It's not an either or.
It's choose your own adventure, okay? And when you join and enjoy Thrive Market, you're also helping a family in need with their one-for-one membership matching program. You join, they give.
Save time and money and shop Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/dadville for 30% off your first order, plus free $60 gift.
That's thrivemarket.com/dadville. thrivemarket.com/dadville. And join today.
I've always told you this, but I think one of the things that I have so much respect, I have a lot of respect for you just in general, which I've told you, but I think one of the things I've always loved about the way you guys work and knowing you so well is that you seem to be so open to that stuff. It's something we've talked about when we were talking about, getting time with you is how kind of what John was, asking is this interesting place where you're someone who is a Christian in a genre that obviously has a lot of Christians and thankfully has a real understanding of that. You know, I mean, the country genre has got a real unique relationship.
Totally. With
the church and God, which is great. But to be so open to go like, hey, we're just going to try this thing. It was so fun being out with y'all that weekend because sitting there side stage and I actually booked it out to front of house because like Tomlin went on stage and so I just like huffed it to get out because I wanted to be on stage to see the crowd when he walked out
right.
And then I wanted to be in the crowd to be able as the song was going
it, yeah.
And I'll never forget that moment too because I have pictures on my phone of you guys are in the back with your hands up and Chris is just smiling. It just felt so God in these places that you love to see him and everybody's enjoying it. But I think like one of the things that's always so fun to see with how you handle and you and BK both is that there is this sort of willingness to bring your faith into what you're doing. And there's not this fear of kind of separation of,
right.
Church and job or whatever. Like with John and I and you too, we all grew up in the church, but we all play music that isn't necessarily church-based music.
Right.
And I'm curious, like you just said, do you find that that's hard for you to do and reconcile or is that, especially as you think about the future, like we've talked about, you and I, how do you hold that together? Like, how is it you try to think about that?
Yeah, two thoughts on that is I think from day one, BK and I have both felt literally like God put us together and it's kind of been like an anointing. Even when we were doing writer's rounds, like we would circle up and say a prayer together before we go on. We literally, I heard God tell me when I saw BK leading worship one night at Belmont that, hey, that's who you're supposed to do music with.
Man.
Like, that was literally an audible voice. And I was like, whoa, that doesn't happen very often for me. So we've always felt like, okay, we're in the right place. This is where God wants us. This is who we're supposed to be doing music with. And then, like I've told you before, we've spent years in bars and clubs and
playing these shows until 2 a.m. and drinking a half a bottle of whiskey and doing the whole deal. And it's like, sometimes you just pray and you're like, what am I doing out here? Like, why am I out here? Like, I thought God was going to use me
yes,
in my music.
That's right.
For him.
That's
you know
right.
what I mean?
That's
so
right.
like, yeah. you kind of go back, you're like, all right, God, like, I'm still trusting you, but like, really? Like, Miss Kitty, is it 2 a.m.? Is this really where I'm supposed to be? Like, so looking back now, it's been incredible. And you've helped me see this too.
Yeah.
And just encouraged me, because I think God likes to use the non-expected, I don't know, the art, man.
Yeah,
What God puts in our heart and creates and helps us write, and the shows that we do now, like, it's just been inspiring, because you hear people's heart through it, and you meet people and they say how whatever song changed their life and how it kept them, you know, going through a hard time and this and that, and you start kind of thinking, man, like, our songs do have a reason, like a bigger picture purpose. You know, it's not, maybe they're not singing "This Is How I Roll" and on Sunday morning at church, but you know, this is uplifting people and this is encouraging people. And like you said, Dave, like, just to be at a concert and to give joy and happiness to so many people and be able to let them forget their worries for
a
couple hours.
What a blessing.
It was really encouraging. And I've been telling other artists that too. Like, that is God, man. That's God. Like, hopefully God's just outflowing from us and showing love and encouragement. It doesn't, and not the typical church fashion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's been really cool and eye-opening and a fun journey to see. Just when you think God's got you in a place that you don't belong, you're kind of like, you know what? Like, who am I to think where God can use me at? Like,
that's right.
Why does he have to be the typical, what I expect?
Yes.
You know? So I think I'm trying to look at life in all areas of that, you know, like that now, and not be kind of closed-minded and just think big, broad ideas and kind of look for those open doors and run to
it. I have this feeling that if the 18-year-old you sat down with where you are in your life now, I think he would be so excited about that.
Yeah.
Do you know what
I mean? Sure,
just in the way of, like, you played, you know, in the church, you know, that's where you learn how to do what you're doing. And then, you know, to see that your path is where it is, where it's uniting music that you love and write with a faith that you're involved in, that you believe, and it's and they're becoming so simpatico. I think that, like, you know, 18-year-old Tyler would be like, dude, this is awesome. Like,
yeah,
it's working.
Totally.
You know what
like
I mean?
It all makes sense now. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Oh. That it's sort of coming to this beautiful sort of head.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
And, cool. And I'm with you. I think, I mean, we've talked about this in our men's group and stuff, but it's so fun to see Nashville. I just feel like there's a really cool thing that's happening where so many people are feel more encouraged to talk about their story and their faith and what they believe in their careers.
Right.
And so it's emboldening. I mean, I think especially your story is just really giving a lot of people a lot of, you know, faith to, I mean, it was crazy. My dad, I don't know if I told you this, my dad sent me the Fox News headline of y'all with Chris.
Yeah, that's
and I was
crazy.
Like, that's just so great. And the article was great. Like, it wasn't, there was no, and I just thought it's so cool to see that even the culture responds, like these waves that you send out, you know,
totally.
that,
I think there's something to be said about just being transparent and vulnerable and real. Like, I think back in the day, it used to be more common to separate your work and your career with like your family and your faith.
Yeah.
And it's like, and your passions and your hobbies. Like, but why can't it all be kind of one? Because it is all one for me, you know what I mean? And I think our fans, they want to know all the aspects of who we are, you know what I mean? And we want to show that. We want to show, like, I'm proud to be a husband. I'm proud to be a dad. I'm proud to be a believer. I'm proud to be FGL. I'm proud to be a husband. So, like, I want to show all that as opposed to just, like, here's what I'm doing on stage and you guys don't know nothing else about me.
That's
you know
right. That's right.
Like, so I think that's cool, and I think God's using that, not just with me, but with everybody, and kind of showing, like, hey, people are listening to us now, and it's just cool to have that voice and to have that platform, but also the responsibility of saying, hey, we got to lead people in the right direction, you know, whether that's a spiritual road or a family, you know, just being able to show the world love, man, through whatever.
That's right.
To do, you know?
That's right.
All right, now we're officially in the dad. We're in Dadville now.
Dad mode.
Yeah, dad mode.
We're in dad mode. So, first off, I have a Luca and a Liv.
What?
And you have a Luca and a Liv.
That's
right. Do you call her Liv?
Yeah.
Yeah? So we
that's
have
cool.
Luca
wow.
and Livy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we're just such fans of you guys. We're huge.
That's awesome. So. Name our kids after y'all's kids.
But before they, you
well,
had
we
your
changed
kids.
There was a lot of paperwork, but we got it done.
Yeah.
So when Amy and I, Luca is about to turn 7. So when Amy and I had Luca, we still lived in Indiana. And I remember thinking, like, I will never tour again. Like, I'm holding my newborn baby girl, and I'm like, I got to figure something else out, because I can't. Up until that point, that's been our bread and butter, like me going on the road. And Amy had actually toured with me up until that point. So that's kind of what brought us down here to Nashville, is I was thinking, I'm going to write songs for other artists. I can never leave again.
Yeah.
What was your experience like? Did you have any
kind of like that, but kind of like I'm ready for Friday to get here so I can leave.
But for real.
Let's be honest here.
But for real.
No, it just definitely adds another element of, you know, when we're away, of me missing being home. You know, it was before I missed Haley pretty badly, and a lot of times she could come out on the road, and a lot of times we're really fortunate now because we can bring the kids and the name. We have our own bus, so we can we can just, you know, we can all load up if we want to and hit the road for the weekend, and it's amazing. But a lot of times for me now, it's a good, healthy balance to be on the road for 2 or 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Occasionally just by myself. It's a challenge for me. I love to be around people. They charge me, and I'm, you know, it's hard for me to be alone. So it's good for me to say, babe, I'm going to be, you know, I'll be home Sunday, and I'm going to have 2 days on the road and let you have 2 days here by, you know, at the house. But it is tough, man. It does add another element. I miss them like crazy, and it's so much more fun when they can be out there. And I do think just a different perspective. I mean, I never had the thought of I can't ever leave again, for sure. But it was that perspective shift. Like, it wasn't all about touring. It wasn't all about FGL. It definitely wasn't all about myself anymore. Yeah. It was more like, I'm leaving the house more to raise for my daughter now, and my son and my family, and this is hopefully going to put them through school, and as opposed to this is going to hopefully buy a boat or something. You know what I mean?
Right,
So it's been really fun, man. It's good.
Yeah. It's interesting how it can, like, at the same time give so much more meaning to it and simultaneously make it painful now.
Yeah, totally. You know? Totally.
Well, you knew too, and I think that's one of the things that's so interesting about when you're in a, you know, one of the things that the country music world does so well to me is tour. I mean, it's like they've got that on a grid,
right,
and it's on lockdown. And so I would imagine that you can't, like, you've got rhythms. You and Haley, y'all have rhythms in your life, like, that you live in and live by and you get used to, and your marriage kind of works in some ways because of these rhythms.
Totally.
So I would imagine it would make all the sense in the world to me that you have this baby and you're going, yes, I want to be here, but, like, at the same time, like, we have this way
we
live. We have the rhythm, and you can't just chuck, you know, like, now I'm just going to be home all year.
Right.
I
mean, it'd probably drive her crazy
if
I was home all
the
time.
Exactly. Because you sort of build your relationship on the rhythms.
Right.
Like, you sometimes.
And we have two rhythms. It's like y'all know, it's a tour season rhythm and then an off tour rhythm.
That's exactly right.
We're in the middle of tour when we just had Luca. So it was like, yeah, like you said, like, all right, let's just keep the rhythm. We felt like he was born and we literally just kept
going.
I mean, for the most part, you know, other than, I mean, Haley's life was already consumed with being pregnant and baby, you know, baby life. But yeah, for us as a couple, it was just kind of to keep the rhythm going and maintaining. We got like another 2 or 3 weeks to go and our tour's over. But we, you know, he came right in the middle of the tour. So we just kind of kept rocking.
Now that you've had, especially with two, because there were three of y'all, are there ways when you think about your dad that you can see you picked, like, from funny things to annoying things to wonderful things? Like, do you see the things that you've picked up in how you father your kids?
Yeah, totally. Man, that's wild, isn't it? That I mean, yeah, all the time I catch myself being like, well, that was a dad move. You know, or that was what my dad would have done or whatever. And it's also interesting that I think about often, because I can't really compare the two, because, you know, my dad's life was so different than ours. You know what I mean? Mm. He was making ends meet and he was working, left the house at 7:30 and came home at darker after. You know what I mean? And not that it was I didn't feel neglect from that necessarily, but for me, it's just different. Like, you know, Monday through Wednesday, I have the potential to be home and present and with the kids all day. If I'm not writing or if I'm not, I usually don't do that, unfortunately, because I do try to say, well, I'm going to be very present and not have my phone with me until after breakfast or after dinner. I'm going to be present and put my phone away, as opposed to, you know, a lot of times in my growing up in my house, it was more of the, you know, the dad's working, the mom's at home doing the thing,
and it's just how it is. You know what I mean? Mm, so yeah. A lot of times it does take a little bit of adjusting and realize, hey, like, we just don't live the life that I lived growing up.
Yeah,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, a couple of weeks ago, I was supposed to go to the – I had already told Haley I wanted to, and I put it in the – I told her to put it in the calendar, which means it's official. It's
yeah,
happening.
Yeah, that's
right?
Yeah, it's done.
So, and then I completely – I was – my right got pushed back that day, and Haley calls me about halfway through the ride. She goes, hey, where are you at? I go, well, I'm riding. What's up? She goes, I thought you were going to come to the doctor's office. It's Luca's first appointment, da-da-da-da, at the doctor. And I go, oh, I'm so sorry. I can't make it. I'm in the middle of a ride. I forgot about it or whatever. And I think even those little things, like I didn't grow up with my dad going to the doctor's appointments with me because it was the middle of the day and that's what we did with mom.
That's
you know?
Right.
So for us, I just think little dynamic things like that. It's like, oh, I could have totally been there for my wife and my kids. I just didn't fully think that one through. You know what I mean? Like
totally.
And it didn't feel like the necessary expectation, I guess, if you will. But but in our life, it can be, you know? Yeah. So. I don't know, just adjusting to that.
It's so weird to me. I mean, I think all three of us can relate to this. Like, what we do for none of us is in the pedigree. Like, my family didn't have this. John's didn't. Yours didn't. So you're not only creating a rhythm in a life that you aren't used to, but your family isn't used to.
Right.
Which is okay, you know. But you don't have anything to base it off of. So there's no sense of, like, you know, seeing my dad be a singer-songwriter, okay, this is how he did this. I'm doing the same thing. I'm doing the same thing.
Right.
But you also, like, you know, I think we've all done better than our parents have, which is a real blessing. But then that's a whole other set of new problems.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're like...
I mean, that's what I would say is one of my constant struggles as currently in my life as a dad, as a husband, because I had a similar upbringing. You know, my dad would leave for a long time. He would leave Monday morning and he would get home Friday night. And he was flying all over, you know, doing more traditional just work. Like work that, like, at the end of the day, like, you punch a clock and you're done.
You can be off work, too.
And now you're off work, you know. And so I've really, it's been hard for me to kind of just exist in the life that I have right now and not feel like on some level this weird kind of guilt for, like, I'm constantly... feeling like I'm not working hard enough all the time.
Right.
And even though my wife, if she were here, she would be like, John works very hard.
Right.
Because she knows the times that I'm working and the sacrifices affect her. But, you know, that's something that I deal with. And I think, Dave, what you're kind of illustrustrating is the reason why that situation. I don't know if that's
something that
you deal with.
I always feel that, too.
With.
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah, totally.
It doesn't matter how many thousands of people are in that venue.
Or how many records or how many stats Dave reads to me or whatever. It's like, I still got to go to work or I'm going to get outworked. I don't want to get outworked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't know. Maybe that was definitely a good thing that was instilled in me at a young age. But now at a little older, it's like, okay, I got to still find balance. Like, I do work hard enough. I do deserve an off day. I do deserve to relax, and sometimes I have to make myself do
just
it.
Call, if you ever need that, call me. I'll read that to you.
Yeah, thanks, dude.
Just be like, Dad, I'm in a bad head.
Well, we've got it recorded. So.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll just go back and visit this.
So one of the things that we're going to skip just a second, because I think this is kind of what we're talking about. One of the things that I'd love to hear really both of y'all speak to is, like, you know, you grew up in middle-class families like we did. I mean, I would argue maybe while we lived in Mississippi, we might have been, like, lower middle class, but my dad was a preacher, and I think, you know, there's sometimes I wonder if he was selling drugs on the side to make a movie. But, but, like, it's such an interesting thing, which y'all both spoke to a minute ago, but you enter into this sort of new where you start having success and you know, like, you start making some money. And the paradigm that you were expecting, which was, like, hustle, make ends meet, get the kids through school, get them through college, get some retirement, you know, whatever it was, like, you start going, like, hey, this is, like, kind of happening.
Yeah.
You know, and much earlier than I suspected it too. How have you seen that affect just parents?
Am I supposed to retire now?
What happened?
Is this it?
I think that paragraph ends with, and now that he's living on the beach with his family, he does open mic
he's
gigs
32
for fun.
And never working
never
again.
Never working again. But, like, how have you seen that affect just the parenting part of your life? Like, I mean, yours is such a great example of this. You had a dad that was hustling. He was out there making it happen. You knew, I mean, I felt this way, John and I talked about it. I never had to doubt where we were financially. Not mm-hmm. that, But, you know, like, there was, it was really common for me to go somewhere and go, I want that. Mom would be like, hey, honey, like,
right.
I'm so, we can't afford it. And she meant that.
Right.
And I knew she meant it.
Yeah.
I never had to be like, okay.
Yeah.
But how?
My kid's going to be like, yeah, right, Dad.
You just want a motorcycle.
I know you just bought that toy off Amazon. Don't lie to me.
But like,
you got three motorcycles in the garage.
That's right. How are, like, how are, have y'all gotten that thing where y'all are trying to figure that out? Like, how are y'all navigating that from what you grew up with?
Yeah, that's
now where you are.
I think about that a lot. We talk about that, you know, with Haley. It's like, man, I don't want to raise rich kids.
Yeah.
I don't want to raise spoiled rich kids. I will go crazy if my kids end up this way.
Right.
But at the same time, like, you know what? We've worked hard for what we have, and I'm not going to sacrifice having my toys so my kids don't. You know what I mean? Like, yo, how are we gonna do this? I'm just going to, like, kids, you just... Daddy has all these toys and mommy has all these jewels because we worked really hard.
Right.
Here's a lawnmower. Good luck.
Right. Yeah. I'll see. Yeah.
The neighbors want you to cut the grass for 20 bucks a yard. Go after it. I don't know, man. I think that's something we're going to have to just kind of navigate as we get there and cross that bridge when we get there, because it's definitely something that we're conscious of. And I think that's maybe just a key component as they get older, just trying to be really aware and just realize the things that instill that work ethic and the value of a dollar and, you know, all those things, how to work hard, how to be grateful and thankful for things. And just, I think if you're just sort of aware of that throughout the process of raising kids, I'm hoping that some of that will just wear off on them. You know what I mean? And the things that Dad taught me and the things that he did, and just a little, although we're not financially in the same position that I was as a kid, I do feel like we can somewhat set the scene for them to just still be grateful. And I've been encouraged because I know multiple families now as we've had kids, and I ask myself, that's one of my probably biggest fears is how do we manage having kids and raising them the right way with not struggling? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Going on all kinds of cool trips and doing this and having cool experiences and nice food and da da da. And a chef and somebody that helps us do the laundry. Like, that didn't have that as a kid. Like, how do you not spoil a kid? But I've been encouraged because I know quite a few families that I've run into now that are really successful and well off and have some of the best kids.
Wow.
That are so grateful and so polite.
What's the consistency there?
I don't know. I'm still studying that. So you get back to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, you need it. Yeah.
But just great parenting and a sense of being present and reminding the kids, like, hey, like, even what just talking to them and helping them understand, like, all those values and all those things that you kind of grew up learning and are still kind of learning.
Because I think that's the thing that's so hard to shake, is that you can't, your kids are going to know just osmotically growing up and, like, oh, our house is bigger than that one kid's house we just went to. Or when we go to vacation, we stay in this place.
Right.
Or so you can't, they're already figuring it out. So you realize, like, it really is our job.
It's just
even,
communication.
It's just
right?
how to communicate, present it all to them.
Well, you know, it's something that I've literally never thought of.
And take a trip to Africa every year just to make sure they're good.
Gosh.
For sure. But one thing that I haven't thought about until right now is our kids are going to experience us making these decisions and living in, you know, within our means, even if maybe we don't have to. That is something that maybe, like you're saying, Dave, when you were in the store and you asked for that thing, your mom, like, the decision was already made.
Yeah.
That wasn't a decision for her.
That's right.
The books are the books.
Yeah, the books are the books, yeah.
So your kids are going to see you living the way that you want them to see you live.
To piggyback off of that, I feel like it's a cool opportunity to say, you know, because maybe my dad didn't want this to be my imprint and the message that was sent to me, but as a kid, I was taught hard work was very important, probably the number one or two most important things, how hard you work. And then the reason you work is to make money. So my dad spent 12 hours a day pursuing money, not in a bad way because he had to. Yep. But fortunately, maybe for us, we can say, hey, kids, look, there's some people that have tons of money and have way more money than us. There's some people that have way less money than us. We're really fortunate and blessed because God's given us everything we need, and but because of that, we have to give back. We have to do this. We have to do that and teach them all the things, and also can teach them that, hey, it's not about money, kids. Like, look, it's about being nice to your neighbor and sharing your toys with your friends and da da da, and hopefully lead by example in that way and say, look, it's a bigger picture. Like, and Dad taught me that too, but by his actions it also said, but I still got to work 12 hours a day to pay the house off. Yeah, you know what I mean? Or whatever. Totally. And so I think for us, it is a scary thought, but it's also an encouraging, empowering thought too, to be like, hey, just so you know, work hard. You want to be able to pay your bills and take care of your family and yourself, but that's not what life's all about.
I still think the most powerful thing that I find with people that I know that really do well is there's nothing more powerful to me than when they're really benevolent. Like, that is always, it just breaks my brain in half, you know, that, and I love that. And I think it's a lot of times why they tend to do so well is that because they are so others centric and they aren't trying to amass their wealth. They're going like, hey, how can I help people? And how can I, how do you think your dad, if he were still here, how do you think he would think about where you are now?
Ooh, I don't know, man. I think about that a lot. I think he would just be like, WTF. You know what I mean? Like, what happened? If he could come back for one day right now and just look at our life and just live our life, it'd be crazy. I always dream. I wish he could just take a ride on a tour bus. I think he would just freak out over that.
How old were you again when he passed?
20. So I was a sophomore in college.
So it was way before all this.
Yeah, yeah. But I was still kind of like, at the level that I was into music, he was a big supporter and, like, definitely was probably one of my biggest fans, you know. So at times I'm like, man, it'd be so crazy if he could be here for a day. But I think he'd be proud, man, for sure. You know, mm-hmm. I think about that a lot. But he taught me a lot of good things that I got to carry on and how to manage all this and how to, you know, keep a good perspective. And I think he'd be pretty pumped.
Golly.
Yeah.
I really think it'd fun. Be amazing. I think that's one of my favorite things about music is that so many of the people I know that do it, like, that was not their original plan.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, we all loved it. And even John, you playing piano as long as you played. Yeah, there was some thought, but it wasn't like at 15, if somebody had asked you, like, what are you going to do when you're 30? You'd be like, rocking the mic.
NBA. Yeah. I mean, at that point, it was the NBA.
What are we dunking on? I'm going to be dunking on folks. But, like, I think that's one of my favorite things about what we do is that there is, I mean, I feel that way about myself. I know we've talked about this to you, but, you know, you kind of look up at some point in your life and you go like, hold on, I'm playing music.
Right.
That is all that I do. If I could go back and talk to my 15-year-old self, he'd be like, so when do you start doing that? Because I'm not doing it right now. Like, yeah. But I think with your dad, it's kind of the same. Like, yeah, he saw you in your interest in music, but to see just where you've been able to go with it.
Right.
And sort of him pop up out of nowhere and be like, wait.
Yeah, he'd trip
like,
out.
This is your tour bus and these are your fans. Like, when did you even start?
Right.
You know what I mean? Just the way that it's progressed is just so crazy.
I know, it really is, man. I think he would be mind blown by that and just by the life that's the life that's been built and the family. And, you know, I often even think if we could just have a week, I'd spend 3 days just going and playing and saying, Dad, look at all these toys. Like, if he were to be financially in the position that we were in, I feel like he would be very similar in the way that he spent his money and stuff like that. So I don't know. I often think about how he would probably just laugh if he came back and just looked around and, you know, we'd probably have to go playing for a few days and riding dirt bikes and stuff. But yeah, man, it's really cool. It's insane to just kind of soak in that. And every now and then, like almost every weekend, I sit on the Tree Vibes bus and I'm just like, guys, we get to write songs and play shows and just play music. And we're all doing really well. Like, financially, we're not broke. Like, I just assumed if you did music, you always kind of had to be the broke musician guy. And that's was fine with me. But now that we're all like paying for employees and raising families and taking care of people, it's just incredible, man. I'm so thankful to be able to do this. What feels like a hobby, you know?
Yes.
It feels like so much fun.
That's
like,
right.
I tell Haley, I'm sorry I work so hard, but I just love it so much. Like, do not want to miss a write.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if my buddies are writing a song, I do not want to miss it. And I do occasionally when I know it's important, and sometimes I don't want to miss being home either, but I just love what I do so much that it's hard not to just, you know, do
it. That's amazing that you have that level of passion at this stage in the game. You know,
yeah,
that you still
well,
love
it
so
comes
much.
In waves too, you know. Yeah. But I do just, I mean, the fact that anything musical is always fun for me, but definitely the creative process and the writing and the being in the studio with your friends and leaving the studio with a song that wasn't in the universe before
that's
you
right.
were there.
That's right.
It's still pretty mind-blowing.
That's right.
When you write a good one, that feeling, it's almost amazing.
Yeah.
I always walk away and I'm like, you know, 5 hours ago, this song did not exist.
Right.
And now it exists.
That's a rush that we're always chasing.
Oh, yeah, my gosh.
So you lost your dad in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And then when did, I mean, pretty around that same time you met BK?
Yeah. Yep. It's probably around that time. I mean, we went to a small school, so I kind of knew who he was. I hung out with a lot of the athletes, even though I didn't play any of the sports. But I knew BK, like, briefly through the guys, and he seemed really cool. But it was our senior year where we really started hanging out and realized, man, we wrote a song together, and it was like, it just clicked. And we were like, yo, this is incredible. Let's write another song. And so, senior year, we kind of started dreaming and writing.
I feel like there are layers to this question, and you answer whatever you feel comfortable answering. But I'm curious what FGL, all the success, was like for your grieving process after losing your dad. And just looking at the timeline, you know, you have your dad, you lose your dad in 2007, and then right around that same time, you have this other guy come into your life who now, to millions and millions of people, you guys are a duo. You know? What is that relationship like? Was there any sense of, like, whether it being the success of FGL or BK himself, did anything step in and sort of take over for your dad a little bit? Or fill any of that void that was left?
I don't know if it was so much that or if I was just, like, motivated by losing him. You know what I mean? If I was just kind of like, you know what? I'm going to channel this energy. I don't know about the – I don't think so. I don't think I ever found – I mean, I'm sure music helped fill that void, but it – and I'm sure having a friend like BK did as well. But I got a lot of really good friends that stepped up, you know, and helped me get through that time. And I think music was a big part. But I also, the older I get, the more – and I look back, that was, what, 12 years ago now. I think whatever my personality type is and all that, like when I'm stressed or going through something, I usually just work harder. You know what I mean? So I think it, at the time, was kind of, I mean, unfortunately, a kick in the butt that maybe I needed, you know? And I just put my head down and worked, you know, and worked and worked and worked. And probably in a way to honor Dad and make him proud. I was, you know, probably telling myself. And also just, that's probably how I dealt with it and kind of avoided the feelings and stuff, you know, at the beginning. So it's all been a process of kind of healing through that. But I don't know.
When you met BK, did that become a part of y'all's communication? I mean, with you having lost your dad, was that something y'all talked about much?
Yeah, I think so. A decent amount. I mean, I've always kind of like talked about Dad in conversation and stuff like pretty regularly, you know, especially at the beginning. It's like part of my way to heal, I think, you know?
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that breaks my heart the most. Like when success comes, I'm like, man, I wish Dad could be here to see this. Or like when I met my wife, I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish Dad could meet Haley or BK even. It's like, there's people in my life that I'm really close with now that I'm just like, man, I just wish that Dad could meet them or they could meet Dad. But you know, it's also just part of life. And you know, I've learned a lot from it and grown a lot and been able to kind of be there for other people that's gone through loss. And you know, God's kind of used it, and it's just sort of, it is what it is. But I definitely miss him a lot still. And those times where we've had a lot of great things happen in the last 10 years. And every time it's just like, oh, I just want to tear up thinking about dad not being able to be here, you know?
Totally.
Okay. So you've given us so much time. So we got a couple last questions we always ask people. What, do you love the most about being a dad?
Man, there's a lot of things that's incredible about being a dad. I think one of the coolest things is it helps me view life through the eyes of a child, which is really fun. You know, I feel like I was trying to get that back for the last 5 years. And then having kids, you're like, oh, it's back. Like, I can see life in a more beautiful, colorful, exciting, peaceful, loving way as opposed to, you know, how we look at it as adults a lot of times, you know, or how the news portrays life or whatever. So I don't know. It's also just incredible to feel that next level love that you don't even, I don't even think I knew existed, you know? And to be able to say, wow, like, I love my kids this much. That's, I'm sort of understanding how Jesus, you know, how God loves us, you know? And it's like, that's been a cool, so I would say between that and then just the overall perspective on life and just the getting to see life through those eyes, I think it's just a, it's a special thing. And I at times I think that's just how God intended it to be. You know, we get to a certain age, we get a little bit whatever, and then you get renewed and recharged when you have kids, you know?
Totally. So what is the thing, would you say, that makes you feel like you're a successful dad?
Man, I think right now especially it's just making time, putting those kids up there on the, maybe not the tip top of the priority list, but definitely the top five, you know, and all of us got time in a day to make time for five things. So yeah, just making sure that you have that time with them, because I just know already how fast it goes by and how valuable those years are. And, you know, it's easy for me to get caught up in my own routines and my own, I mean, busyness of life and career and businesses and all that. And I think just remembering to be present and to be there. And like I said before, trying to set structure up in your life, whether it's putting it on the calendar or whatever, to be present, put your phones away and just kind of just be present, man. I think as a kid, like, that is just so valuable for the parent to just be there. Even if you're just sitting in the floor doing nothing, it's just, they just glow. And you can, again, it takes me back to when I was a kid and just how cool it was to have 20 minutes to throw the baseball or something with dad, you know? So I just try to remember that and channel that and make time.
Yeah.
All right, this one's a doozy. Buckle up. What do you want your kids to say at your funeral?
Oh, wow.
Which you've done that. I mean, you've been the one, you know, your dad. So I imagine that would.
That is tough. I think I would want them to say that I loved people, that I left a legacy, and I created something on earth that gave glory to God, and also was something they were proud to say that, look what my dad did, you know? Hopefully they can say I was a man of faith and I was a good husband. And something they said at my dad's funeral that I've always remembered is they said that my dad was a people collector.
Oh, so he, like, gosh.
I mean, at his funeral, they had to have two services, one that was in English and one that was in Spanish, because he collected so many people that half the people were Hispanics that worked for him, and they couldn't really fully understand English. So they had a whole nother sermon that was preached by one of my dad's employees, who was a pastor as well. And anyways, I just was really inspired by that and thought, man, a collector of people, that's a really cool way to look at life. And
yeah.
You know, at times, Haley and I look around and we're so thankful. We have so many incredible friends, especially in this town, you know, and all over the country. But I think, man, at the end of the day, at your funeral, like, you can't have too many friends. You know what I mean? Like, show up for you at the funeral. And
yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it'd be cool if my kids could say that I was a collector of people as well. And I feel like I did get that from Dad. I love people and to be around people and, I don't know, just connection, you know?
God, that picture of your dad's funeral, that is isn't that amazing? Mm. Did you go to both?
Yeah, it was back to back.
That's amazing.
It was pretty profound. Neat, man. It was cool. It was definitely inspiring.
Yeah.
My dad had he had so many Hispanic employees that he would always invite them to church on Sunday, and they would always come, but after a while, he realized, like, all right, we're sitting in church. Like, they can't understand a fourth of what the pastor's saying at the speed he's talking and everything. So then he started, like, he talked to our church, and then he was able to get them to basically okay for him to start, like, a Hispanic church within our church. And they had, like, a little chapel out in the garden. So every Sunday, he would go to Spanish church right there in the chapel in the garden of our main church, and they'd have 30 or 40 people show up, and then they could have their own church, you know?
That's really cool.
It was, man. It's pretty neat and definitely
inspiring.
What a
powerful last image.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, to think that your last time thinking about your dad and being with your dad was that. That's incredible.
Definitely cool. And I had actually went home from college that weekend that he passed away, and we hung out the night before, which is crazy because we were going to go to the Supercross race that we go to every year. So I just happened to be home. It was all kind of a God thing. We got some good time together the night before, and then he passed away in our backyard the next day, obviously unexpected. But just to be able to be there and to be with the family and not have to drive from Nashville to Georgia.
And to get time with him.
And to get that time.
Coming down.
Right.
Thinking, when was the last time you talked to him?
Right. So it was, there was a lot of God moments, even in the pain, that was kind of like we were grateful for. So.
Yeah.
So anyways.
All right, last question. What is the one thing that you want your kids to know?
Man, I think just that they're loved by me and by Haley and by God. And if they could genuinely know that and believe that, what more can you ask for as a parent? I know that maybe sounds cliche.
No, dude.
No, that's it.
That's all I can think of, man. Yeah, to know that they're loved.
Yeah.
I hope they always feel that.
Yeah, that's great. T-Hubs.
Thank you so much for
bringing
doing
the heat.
Thank y'all, man.
Bringing
awesome.
The heat.
I love talking.
It was great chatting with you.
This yeah, y'all
great.
Too, man. Thanks
yeah,
for
thank
having
you. Well, that's it. John, we made it through, and
we
everyone
did
else did.
We did
through our very first episode. If you liked what you heard, make sure you subscribe and follow the podcast.
And if you want to be a sweet angel sent from heaven, you can rate this podcast and make sure to follow us on social media at Dave Barnes Music. That's Dave's. And at John McLaughlin. That's mine.
That's actually mine, too, because I bought it. So we will see you every other Monday.
Yeah.
Well, actually, not just you. So you bring your crazy Uncle Ted.
Bring everybody.
Your hairdresser, your hair cutter, because those are always different. The guy who sharpens your lawnmower blades, and your T-ball coach. And your swimming instructor.
And for me, that's just the same guy. All those things.
Well, then bring him, and we'll see you next time on Deadville. Deadville.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.